I can't come here and die. I can't come here and live. Got all this shit on my mind. Like, what the fuck am I doing? Work ain't paid me in time. My boo just ripped me my mood. O2 just cut off my line.
Hi, guys.
And welcome to the Echo Chamber.
I'm Jade.
And I'm Ez.
And today we're joined by a really special guest. She is a creative entrepreneur, a long-time Black British businesswoman, and she is most recently the winner of the Verve Clicquot Bold Futures Award. Today we're joined by Sharmadine Reed. We're honoured to have you, and we're going to jump into the opening question.
So, opening question today is one benefit of and one challenge that comes with being a creative entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me. So a benefit that comes from being a creative entrepreneur is that I think laterally. And by that, I mean that my background in fashion and art and sport and technology and business allows me to draw from a really wide range of sources when I need to solve a problem. It also allows me to really think about a wide variety of users. Often it's really difficult to build a product if you've only had a singular experience. So if you've had a fairly linear pathway or a linear career, it can be difficult for you to remove your biases and think about what other people's experiences might be like. I feel like I'm really lucky in my background as a creative entrepreneur to be able to have had so many experiences that I'm able to build products and services for a huge amount of people. The thing that is probably the negative is that my imagination goes everywhere and my curiosity goes everywhere. So it can mean that when I get into something, I get into it quite obsessively and then I want to exhaust all my knowledge of it. And then it's like can be really distracting. The other thing as well about being creative and a business leader, you can often forget or not necessarily be thinking about the commercials. I tend to be quite a commercial person anyway. I would say I'm 50-50 creative commercial. But it means that I tend to look at the big picture and not so much the detail. So it doesn't matter the type of entrepreneur you are, whether you are more creative or more commercial, or whether you're left brain, right brain, or whatever it is. As long as you know your strengths and weaknesses, you should build your team around you to fill in the gaps of your weaknesses. So because I'm not super detail orientated, I can be, but I don't really want to be. It means that when I'm looking for team members, I'm looking for people who can be really detail orientated, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, get the work done. And it means that I don't feel that I'm doing work that isn't at my most productive.
That's a really robust answer. And it's interesting because it sounds like you know your strengths, you know kind of where to position yourself in terms of the work that you do. Interesting thinking of, I was thinking, what would I answer to that question? I don't think I have as much kind of self-awareness of myself in that sphere.
I was just going to say that one of the first sessions that I ask my members of my women's networking platform, the Stat World, to do is a reflective exercise, Know Thyself, where they have to fill out a template or a worksheet that describes, you know, what makes them most productive. They do personality tests. They do all of these things to say, this is what motivates me. And every single person in my company has to do a presentation on themselves. I have a 52-page presentation on a guide to working with me so that everyone knows exactly how I operate, how my brain works, what I'm excited by, what I'm demotivated by. And it just makes for a real smoother running company. So if you don't know yourself, you're essentially wandering like in the dark. You have to at least know, you know, the things that you're capable of, what it's going to take to get you there, and essentially just the direction of travel. So I highly recommend that you do as many reflective exercises as possible.
I very much hear you. It's interesting. I was actually listening today. I think that the person was referencing Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, and just talking about essentially, yeah, like cultivating self-awareness and living in absence. And I think that what they used was like this notion of like an empty house that no one's living in, it's just open to any and everything. I think the title, like creative entrepreneur, I can understand why somebody might want to attach that to me, but I never thought of myself as creative at all, ever. I thought I was so academic, so like I guess when it came to work stuff and whatever, very logical, very sort of like by the book. I didn't think my mind was just, you know, creating and doing its own thing. But more and more, progressing through academia, working in academia, now writing, carving a career out in that sphere, I'm definitely coming to terms with the fact that I am very creative. Also coming to terms with the fact that 1,000,000% need a massive team of people around me to work out all of the other bits and bobs. I think being really creative and being really like a bit of a visionary when it comes to the like robust business side of things, I can get a bit emotional. So I would say maybe that is, and when it seems that something that I'm envisioning isn't going to come through, or it's going to be like a battle, or I'm trying to get people to see my vision, I think that is where the challenge presents itself for me.
Similar to you, Jade, I think I struggle with the title creative entrepreneur, as in I struggle with owning that label, even though I think I can see how it could fit in terms of like earning money or building a life around some of my creativity. Yeah, I think a benefit would be I'm grateful for the amount of time I get to spend doing things that I like and I enjoy and that I'm just very genuinely interested in. I think that's the main benefit, is just being immersed in things that I actually enjoy. So that's the benefit. And I think the challenge for me would be like knowing how to monetize. So knowing that there's the line between like, oh, when does this become work? When does this become business? Knowing when and how to package and monetize and place value on how that interacts with outsiders. So how that interacts with the people that I'm working with, companies that I'm working with, yada, yada, yada. So I think that's probably my biggest challenge, is how to place value on things and how that's seen in terms of that's by myself, but also how I engage with companies, people, organisations or whatever that I'm working with. Mm. I think that would be my biggest challenge. But yeah, Sharmadine, we've got you on today. We're really glad to have you on. Do you want to kind of tell us a little bit about your journey to this point and kind of like how you've got to where you've got to?
Yeah, I graduated from art school. I went to Central St Martin's and studied fashion communication and promotion. I absolutely loved it. It was 4 years. I graduated with a first, and then I started working for Nike and ASOS. So traveling around the world, styling, you know, I would do an ASOS campaign in Japan and then a Nike campaign in New York. And while I was traveling, I saw all of these really cool retail experiences, you know, amazing Japanese nail bars, amazing New York like nail bars. And I thought, we don't have anything like that in London. So I came back and I mean, I was always traveling. So what, you know, in 2008, I was like, I'm going to open a nail salon. I opened Wah Nails in 2009 and it just took off from day one. It just really resonated. It was like a really cool space where you could have anything you wanted on your nails. You could have it painted on. But more than the nails, it was definitely like a community center where I think that women just felt like they could go and be themselves and meet like-minded women. So the salon took off and we were again traveling the world doing pop-up nail bars everywhere. And then I thought, you know, all of these guys are raising money to build software. I'd love to build software. And there isn't really software for the salon in terms of software that is like very fun and visual and social. So I kind of got to work like designing and thinking about building a software system. And I met my co-founders, Dan and Ken, and we got together in a room and we built the first prototype. We managed to raise funding. You know, all went really well. We're building a platform for the next generation of beauty professionals. And then COVID hit, which, as I'm sure you know, the beauty industry was closed for around 16 months. It was very hardcore. It was like, yeah, really, really concerning. So that's when I decided to pivot. And what we have now is we have built the Stack World, which is a content platform, conversation platform, and in the future, a commerce platform for women to connect with other women and essentially meet, make friends, get clients, get co-founders. And we've got over 1,300 members now, so over 1,000 members, and it's really growing fast, and I'm really excited about the future for the Stack World. You can join for free. And then if you want to access different types of events and content, you can sign up for a subscription there.
Amazing. So one of my best friends is a fan of yours. I remember having a conversation with her years ago and she was like, Warnells. It's a black woman. And I was like, what? So Warnells was something that I was aware of for a really long time. Never knew that it was a black woman. So I'm really interested, I think, not only from that perspective, so what I was just talking about there, but also even for myself. So I'm so hyper aware that personally, I don't feel like if I haven't seen it before, I don't see how I can be it, essentially. So I think that people like Jay Huss or the Receipts podcast hosts, Top Boy, fiction writers that write about inner city experiences, I feel like they have been pivotal in me ever feeling like, oh, Keisha Lisket can be a thing in book form. When I've, of course, done my reading or heard things about yourself, Sharmadine, I really would like to know, who told you you can do that? What did you see that made you think, I, Sharmadine, a black woman, a young woman, can do these things?
How can I say this? Like, a black woman role model didn't exist as a thing, as we well know, right? Like, we're growing up and there are so few black women in positions of power. It's just the default expectation that they, you know, that people in power don't look like us. That's just a given. And I agree with what you're saying, that having writers and actors and directors and all of these people in color people of color creating content is inspiring. But at the same time, it was so few and far between. I'm probably a bit older than you. I'm 37. So when I was growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, it was even like rarer. Do you know what I'm saying? What I was inspired by was my future potential. I didn't try and look to other people and be like, that's what I want to be. I tried to be like, what is the absolute best person that the fullest of who I can be, like on my linear journey, you know what I mean? So as long as I was fulfilling my potential, that was satisfying for me. Because if you start comparing yourself to other people, it's just a never-ending like passage of disappointment. Like, you know, Tolly and her crew with the Receipts are sick. Imagine how many young women want to be like that. They want to have their own podcast, they want to get signed by Spotify, they want to have a book, all of this, but that's their journey and that's their path. And if you start looking like to that as the aspiration, like you're setting yourself up for failure. It can definitely be the inspiration, like how cool to see that. And one of the things I love that rarely happens, so I try and essentially initiate it as much as possible wherever I can, is I love being in complete rooms of women of color. Like, I'm not the minority for a change, you know what I mean? Because I feel that energy coming through, that like we're all here together, like rising, lifting each other up. So I would say that, like, if you look to the dominant power structures today as the benchmark for what is possible, I don't know if your book would have existed in that way, because it's outside of what is perceived normality of language, of structure, of content, of protagonist. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like sometimes not having role models forces you to create something different and new.
I say all of that, and I think on some level, me getting to writing was a manifestation of not needing a role model. I was doing my own thing. And I don't think I would describe like the Receipts or Jay Huss or the writers and producers of Top Boy, for example, as necessarily my role models. But I just think you guys have began to create a world that shows our experiences. And I've taken a lot of inspiration from that. I think reading about your trajectory and hearing about your trajectory, it almost felt like you were just like, oh, no one's doing it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to create it.
But you said earlier as well that you didn't know that WAR was owned by a black woman, right? Like, the salon itself, I feel, had black influences by the visual language. People were attracted because it looked different. It just didn't look like, let's say, quote unquote, a white girl salon, which would be like white and pink and white towels and dead music. You know, you walked in the space and you just knew the space was maybe not black, but definitely diverse. And I think like my method has always been to be as inclusive as possible, rather than thinking of trying to replace one structure with another. Because if you created an all black like salon, like a black only salon or a outwardly black salon, you're essentially just replicating what the dominant patriarchy does. Do you get what I'm saying? You're essentially replicating a system and laying it over another system, or attempting to lay it over another system. What I'm thinking about is how can you actually be horizontal or think laterally about the system and create a space where anyone feels welcome and included. And actually, what I always used to say, it's for all of the weirdos that didn't feel like at home anywhere else. Because if you're the one black girl in your crew at school because you live in a mainly white area, or if you're the one black girl in your crew who likes to go to, I don't know, science talks, and all your friends like to go raving, like there's an element where WAR attracted and drew all of the outsiders, and they found their home at WAR. And that was my preoccupation at the time. In 2009, when I started the salon, not a single person said to me, what's it like to be a black woman in business? Everyone said, how did you start your own company? And then a few years later, when the agenda changed, what's it like to be a woman in business? Then a few years later, when the agenda changed again, what's it like to be a black woman in business? Do you get what I mean? So this rhetoric is only, I've lived through all of the questions. I haven't changed. It's the questions that have changed, and the questions change based on what's the current public and political agenda. At the end of the day, running a business, no matter what, is hard. And I just wanted to make it as big as possible. And I wanted it to be a true reflection of my experience, which was a very diverse, you know, grew up in Jamaican family, but my dad's Indian, even though I don't know him. So I had this like, you know, odd mixed identity. I also went to like very white schools. I was also into art and into science and into tech. Like I just have, but I also love raving and happy to go to carnival and dutty wine. So it's just like, I don't have to be one type of person. I can be a whole woman. And if nobody's going to accept that whole woman, I'm going to create my own space. And that's why I make my spaces, whether it is WAR or Future Girl Corp or whether it was the Stack World. I don't want to wait for someone to accept me. I'll create my space. And if other people like it, they can join it. And it just so happens that I'm fortunate that other people like the things I make.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of things there that are like, that really resonated with me. When you were speaking originally, I was thinking about mainstream acceptance of that kind of diversity in culture or difference in culture. So I was thinking about the ways that like, things being accepted within mainstream spaces, creating a version of validation. And essentially what you were saying is that that wasn't the goal. The goal was to just create this thing that is what it is, and that kind of opens up an expression of your version of creativity, and not to necessarily represent Black women in the beauty industry, which I think is really important.
I think it's important. And I think that you do need both, that's for sure. You definitely need spaces that are exclusively Black, right? Because you just, sometimes you don't want to have to code switch, or you don't want to have to be constantly performing. You know what I mean? So you do need spaces, to me, that are your niche community. I think that's necessary. But at the same time, I think you can't break a system by replacing it with more of the same. And I think I always love doing thought experiments over, do you remember Noughts and Crosses, the book? So I love that as a thought experiment. What if it was the other way around, right? And I love the idea as a thought experiment of, you know, what if women were in power and had been in power for the last 5,000 years? Do you genuinely think that, you know, women wouldn't be oppressive to other genders, or men would, or black people wouldn't be oppressive to white people. Do you get what I'm saying? I like the idea of power as a thought, like who owns the power as a thought experiment. And all the kind of research points to, it doesn't matter who you are, what gender you are, what race you are. If you get a little bit of power, eventually people abuse it, no matter what. You know what I'm saying? So the goal really is to like distribute the power, to me, so that it, there is no dominant group or dominant, you know what I mean? I'm really interested in that as a thought process, like what does it mean to be in power and how can it be abused? Like, for example, my company is obviously mainly women, not mainly, sorry, it's very equal, it's about 60-40. It's also very diverse. It's just as you expect my company to be. When we were in a meeting once, I remember there were five of us women in the room, all different races, and we're watching something was on in the background, and we're waiting for one of the engineers, a white male engineer, to come in the room to show us some work. And on the TV was like some guys, I can't remember, it was like a trailer for a TV show. And we started talking about these guys. Oh, yeah, he's hot. He's hot. That he looks good. Da, 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 da. And then the engineer came in and we were still chatting. And I literally laughed my head off because I said, if this was the other way around, you'd basically say this was harassment. You'd be like, if there were five guys in a meeting room talking about women on the TV and a woman engineer came in, you'd feel uncomfortable, wouldn't you? And it made me think and reflect on how whatever the dominant group is, they start to decide what the rules are.
I think you're saying some super interesting things. And I think that I think similarly, I've had similar conversations with myself around power and how that's held and how what that means in practice. I guess what I'm, how do you hold that truth of that? Oh, actually, there are experiences that you've had or have that show that actually when power's in the hands of the minoritized group, it doesn't necessarily mean that that won't be abused. And also acknowledging at the same time that there are these structural barriers. So being a woman, being black, being a woman in business that is black, there are structural barriers that exist in spite of whether or not you're in that boardroom having those conversations with the other four women. So how do you hold that? How do you negotiate the two things in your work?
I would say the first one is definitely self-awareness and acknowledgement, because, I kind of have a personal rule when it comes to company culture that you have to nip things in the bud straight away and hold yourself accountable immediately so that nothing becomes resentful or built up. So I literally acknowledged straight away to the guy. I was like, I'm really sorry. Like, we're just sitting here objectifying these men on TV. And yeah, that's kind of just like my method of doing things, which is like, I don't let things fester. But in terms of the structural barriers, you know, I think that's a whole other podcast episode in itself, because, you know, it's my favorite quote, right, that you can't use the master's tools to dismantle the master's house. And I feel like, is it about breaking down structural barriers, or is it about creating new experiences? Like, what is it about? You know, I've spent my whole life, and it's something that I really had to come to terms with about 5-6 years ago, is I've spent my whole life waiting to get a pat on the head from the proverbial white man that I did good, that I managed to build my business, sell books, do this, do that, win this accolade, this achievement. But for what? Like, you're never truly at that table. That's just the fact of it. You are not the same. And I think, like, there's nothing wrong with not being the same. It's just acknowledging you are not the same. And I feel awards and achievements come for different reasons, and you accept them for different reasons. And for me, the almost sole reason for accepting achievements is visibility, going back to your first earlier questions, so that other people can see me and be like, well, she did it, so I can do it. They don't know what I've done. They don't know what sacrifices I've made. They don't know how hard it is. They don't actually know what I've done. but they can at least see that I did something and someone awarded me for it. But to me, they're not the reason why I do it at all. They're not the reason why I do the work. I do the work because I genuinely think that we should have gender equality. It's as simple as that. I don't have any other fancy things to say. I just think women and men should be treated equally, and that's all. That's that. It's not a big hard ask, right? Yeah, for me, I don't really think about breaking down barriers as a thing. It's not really in my language, or, you know, it's not something I think about. I tend to focus on how can I grow the women's economy by creating my own spaces in partnership with existing structures, sure, but it always leads from my own space so that what we do is not parasitical to them. It becomes the other way around, that there is a demand and a need for what we do because we are feeding the outside structures.
Yeah, I very much hear you. I think it's interesting what you touch on, as we just had Black to Front on Channel 4, was essentially doing exactly what you've just said, creating something that was adjacent to what we've already got existing. I truly wish that we had, like...
Why have we not got a BET? But do you remember, like, look how many random TV shows are on cable, like London Live Channel. Do you remember that channel? How is there not just a Black channel? Like, I don't know. I'm fully aware that some of my thoughts and feelings on it might seem contradictory. But with Black to Front, I thought it was cool, but I was like, shouldn't this just be normal? Like, shouldn't this just be every day? I don't know. It's a difficult thing. And I guess I don't really have a blanket positioning on this stuff.
Yeah,
I think that media is problematic, big time problematic. Media, advertising and media to me can be the devil, you know what I'm saying? And I think, like, almost every bit of self-hatred that little Black girls get comes from advertising, media, social media. Do you get what I'm saying? And I'm like, I don't know. It feels like a special award for being a good Black girl, you know? I don't know. I haven't watched it. Do you know what? I'm going to watch it back on iPlayer because I was really busy that day. I'm going to watch it because I don't often like commenting on things before I've experienced them. But as a concept, Channel 4, back in the day when I was a kid, Channel 4 was the best channel ever. Channel 4 is where I used to watch, there's a TV show at night that was like a black TV show. They had it was just really diverse. To me, Channel 4 in the 90s and 2000s had like lots going on a youth culture basis, and it was really engaging. And I'm like, why can't we go back to that instead of trying to make up for the last decade of whatever you've not been doing by like shoving it all on one day? That was my first thought. I was like, why don't they just say they're going to commission a regular Black British TV show? Because historically we had them. We had The Real McCoy, you know, we had Desmond's. I can't remember the name of the one. It began with T. I'm gonna find it and send it to you. It was something like Touch or Trek. Pardon?
Wasn't it T4?
Nah, you guys are too young. This is way back. It was at night. It was wicked. It was like club culture. It was like, I absolutely loved it. But it was, as far as I was concerned, it was a Black TV show, Channel 4, like in the 80s, in the 90s,
I think that you've what you said has kind of, it's a perfect way to answer it, basically, is that there isn't one. It is contradictory. I think there's not one way to hold it, because I think the same thing. I think, on the one hand, yeah, the representation is amazing. Big up everyone that was involved. It must have taken a lot to produce such quality. And like, on the one hand, there's that. On the other hand, it's that, why is this something that we're celebrating? Why are we still here? Why are we still in this place? And I think it links into what you were saying about business, and it links into what you were saying about, like, yeah, you happen to be a Black woman in business on the one hand, who is doing this amazing thing. On the other hand, you also have to hold that existing in your positionality and where you exist in kind of social hierarchies means that that means something, and that there is there are eyes on you, and there are kind of expectations, or there are kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? You inspire people, you're in a position that you, and that gives you a different type of power, and how we hold that and use that responsibly, caringly, in with enough challenge, but also be able to kind of be free and create and do what we want to do for ourselves. So it's that constant tug of war.
Exactly. I mean, like, even when you say it must have taken a lot to get that quality, that's TV. All day, every day. You know, TV, it's like, it shouldn't have to feel like extra work because it's not actually extra work. It shouldn't feel like, it's a bit like when people say, oh, I really want to hire more Black people in my workplace. And they're like, well, you know, it's going to take more work because we need to reach out to more communities. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, no, it shouldn't be more work. It should be the normal amount of work that you do, because when you want to hire a white C-suite person, you do that work. So I'm like, when you want to make a TV show that only has white presenters, you do that work. So why can't you do the same? But you know what? I'm going to watch it. Just thinking about like these TV shows, like I said, back in the day. And I remember it was like really... It had Richard Blackwood on it. It was, I can't remember what it's called, but I will find it. But yeah, times are changing, but as far as I'm concerned, they're slow. And it's still, yeah, it's still like an accolade that is like in addition to, when I'm like, why can't it just be part of? But, you know, anyway, we'll see.
That's a good point to end on. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to more awards and more visibility for yourself and all of the things that you're doing, because, yeah, you are somebody that when people see you, they do come to the realization that things can happen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Paid me in time. My bae just ripped in my mood. O2 just caught off my line.